You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM, Madison. Those stories.
BBC News, I'm John Shea. Israel's military has released the first findings of its investigation into the killing of seven aid workers in Gaza on Monday. It said the strikes on the World Central Kitchen convoy were a grave mistake, stemming from three major identification failings. From Jerusalem, here's our Middle East Bureau Chief, Joe Floto.
According to the IDF, a drone unit mistook an aid worker carrying a bag for a gunman carrying a rifle, and as a result targeted the car they were travelling in. The army account of the evening confirms that two aid workers survived the initial missile strike and escaped to a second car in the convoy. 2 minutes later, that car was also struck by a missile. Even then, there were survivors who made it to a third vehicle only to be struck again in turn, leaving everyone in the convoy dead. The military has acknowledged that it failed to communicate to all army units in the area that a major aid operation was underway, and that a missile strike should not have been authorised based on such little evidence.
The IDF has sacked two senior officers for their involvement in the strikes. World Central Kitchen said the IDF response was cold comfort for the victims' families and has called for an independent commission to investigate the killings. The United States has welcomed Israel's announcement that it will open and expand three crossings to allow more humanitarian aid into Gaza. The Israeli move was understood to be in response to a specific request from President Biden. Yoland Nell reports from Jerusalem.
According to local reports, Israel's security establishment and diplomats had warned that if steps weren't taken, the country would risk international sanctions and even an arms embargo. In the north of Gaza, the Erez crossing, badly damaged in the 7th of October attacks which started the war, is set to reopen, and Israel's nearby container port at Ashdod will be used to process shipments of supplies. Aid sent via the Kerem Shalom crossing in southern Gaza will also increase.
The US Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the proof of Israel's announcement would be measured in the results on the ground. The World Food Programme says it's completed its first delivery of aid to the Darfur region of Sudan since February. The situation in one of the areas worst affected by the conflict between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary RSF is reported to be dire. Here's Barbara Platt-Usher.
WFP said two large convoys entered Darfur from Chad in late March after lengthy negotiations with the Sudanese authorities to reopen the routes. They carried enough to feed a quarter of a million people, but it's not clear when the next round of aid can travel this way. The UN agency warned that without a constant flow of supplies through all humanitarian corridors, Sudan could see unprecedented levels of starvation and malnutrition. A number of trucks were also able to reach the area from Port Sudan, the first aid delivery transported across conflict lines in 6 months.
This is the latest world news from the BBC. The governor of Zimbabwe's central bank has been giving details of a new currency known as Zimbabwe Gold, or ZiG. It's backed by Zimbabwe's gold and other precious metal reserves, which are close to $200 million. It's the latest attempt to stabilise an economy that's lurched from crisis to crisis for the past 25 years. In a further sign of crippling labour shortages in Russia, the oil giant Lukoil has signed a deal with Uzbekistan to hire workers on temporary contracts. This comes as Central Asians living in Russia are facing suspicion and hostility in the wake of the Moscow concert hall attack, which the authorities say was carried out by Tajiks. Russia's labour shortage has been aggravated by mobilisation for the war in Ukraine. The Croatian birthplace of Yugoslavia's former leader, Josip Broz Tito, says it would happily receive his remains if they're moved from Serbia's capital, Belgrade. It comes after a senior Belgrade city official, Aleksandar Sapic, called for the removal so that a museum of Serbian history could be built at the site where Tito is currently buried. Guy Delaunay reports.
Aleksandar Sapic claims Tito caused evil to the Serbian people. He says the remains of the former Yugoslav leader should be returned to Kumrovec, his birthplace in Croatia. Tito's granddaughter, Svetlana Broz, says that's an idiotic idea. She accuses Mr. Sapic of appealing to right-wing voters ahead of June's elections. Kumrovec says it would be delighted to be Tito's final resting place. Its mayor believes the Yugoslav leader's remains would attract 1 million visitors every year.
There's a new warning about the shrinkage of European glaciers as a result of climate change. In its annual report, the Austrian Alpine Club says 92 of the 93 glaciers it measured over the past year in Austria have shrunk. The club said 2022 to 2023 was exceptionally unfavourable for glaciers. BBC News.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Arts and Literature Laboratory, Madison's community-based contemporary arts center located at 111 South Livingston Street. Arts and Literature Laboratory houses an art gallery and performance space, a writing center and library, artist studios, and a dedicated education studio, which features classes for all ages. Information about current exhibits, performances, and classes, and how to get involved as a member or volunteer is available at artlitlab.org or on social media at artlitlab.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Overture Center for the Arts, presenting the Broadway show The Kite Runner, Friday, May 24th through Sunday, May 26th, in Overture's Capitol Theater. Beginning at a kite-flying tournament in Kabul, The Kite Runner spans two decades and two continents, revealing a journey of forgiveness and shows us all that we can be good again. More information and tickets are available at Overture.com.
It's the Friday 8 o'clock buzz for April 5. I'm Andy Moore. The studio got a facelift. I bet you've been hearing about it all week. A new soundboard. And then there's this like this fancy, kind of antique-y, giant oval table with all of these new mic stands and this big fire alarm looking thing light in the middle of like a single stick candelabra that has the big, you know, red and green lights to go on. I feel like a real big boy in here, to tell you the truth. And I almost like turned on my heels when I walked in. It's like I'm in the wrong place. It just looks fantastic. And this is going to sound corny, but these kinds of upgrades are thanks to your pledges and to your financial gifts. So thanks a lot about that. Speaking of gifts, it was my wife Peggy's birthday on Tuesday, and we had so much fun this week. We had dinner with friends. With nutty fun presents. Then Marc Maron at the Barrymore on Wednesday, and a show last night at the Majestic Theater. Of course, some of you know, somewhere along the line, we were all given permission to take a birthday and make it a birth week, right? I don't know when that happened, but it's awesome, and I'm all in for that. But the pillow will look very good tonight. On her actual birthday, not to be confused with birth week, I took a sheet cake, which, you know, come to think of it, a sheet cake, you know, it's worth a whole monologue of its own, now that I think about it. Sheet cake. Engineer Jim Wilson, I know you got your hands full. Do you like to eat sheet cake?
I like all kinds of cake, Andy.
Okay. Yeah, but sheet cake, you know, I don't want to, like, diminish it, but... It's like the trailer park, you know, of the pastry case. Weird waxy frosting and, like, flashy bright colors that I don't think have even been invented yet. But anyway, I took a sheet cake out to the Mendota Elementary School Teacher's Lounge. And let me tell you, putting a sheet cake on the table in a teacher's lounge is like putting a slab of meat on the Serengeti for lions. Total feeding frenzy. And if you think all that high-speed feed is because teachers are savages, think again. That's not it at all. This is why It's because, and seriously, if your walking around knowledge of teacher reality doesn't include anything but this, take note. Write this down. It's because elementary school teachers get like 12 minutes for lunch. What can anyone do in 12 minutes? That's right. In the time you take at work to casually hear about Larry down the hall's new Kia, elementary school teachers get that same amount of time for lunch. And then it's right back to work. No Larry, no gabbing about the Kia, no hour for lunch. Anyway, that's sheet cake in the teacher's lunch. I got off topic. I don't know about you, but I get nervous going into teacher's lounge. I mean, I really get clenched. And I can only believe it comes from the PTSD I took on when I was told to go into the teacher's lounge in sixth grade. The principal asked me, go in there, Andy, and give Mrs. Barnett this message. I don't remember what the message was. I think I probably forgot it the second I walked in. I didn't want to go in there. Who would? And when I got in there, the lighting was all kind of dark, like my eyes had to adjust to it. Kind of creepy, to tell you the truth. Like, what's going on in here? You know, it was nothing like I expected. I don't even know what I expected. It was a teacher's lounge. Well, friends, what was going on in there was right there at the main table, it was Mrs. Wright smoking a cigarette, huffing down a Salem. Mrs. Wright from room 313 smoking a freaking cigarette, and she looked right at me, and then made this circle with her like fire engine red lips, and she blew out a long jet of blue smoke right in my face. It was almost as if to say, if you come into the teacher's lounge, you deal with it, little man. The teacher's lounge. That's when I decided, you know, the teacher's lounge is like a cruise ship where once you get into international waters, you can do anything you want. You know, you can gamble, buy exotic liquor. You can marry a horse, you know, if you want to. That kind of thing. You can tell it still upsets me. Mrs. Wright from room 313 and her red lips blowing smoke at me. God. And here's the moral to the story. Being married to a teacher for 38 years hasn't helped any. That's 38 years of going in and out of elementary schools while doing everything I can to avoid going in teacher's lounge. There's no telling what you'll see in there. By the way, the Mendota Elementary School Teacher's Lounge is spick and span. It's straight up nice. Everyone is behaving in there and are total professional. So anyway, but most of the time, you know, you don't know what you'll see in a teacher's lounge. And brothers and sisters, you can't unsee it. So happy birthday week, Peggy. And good luck, a sincere good luck to all the teachers, because none of them can be listening now. But if you know one, tell them good luck as they try to finish these last unending long weeks of the school year. All right, well, that's a long, never-ending monologue for this morning. We've got a killer show for you. It's all books, movies, and music. That's what Fridays are for, I guess. Later in the hour, we'll talk with musician, producer, and filmmaker Wendy Schneider. Her documentary, Angels of Dirt, tells the story of a girl who realized her dream of becoming a championship dirt track motorcycle racer. The film will be featured at the Wisconsin Film Festival on Sunday. And first up this morning, we go to Liverpool. Yeah, that Liverpool. And we'll introduce you to a musician turned novelist. Peter Davies' new book, Valediction Records, is a rock and roll band reunion tale with a twist. So we mentioned movies and we mentioned books. The music part of the hour will be a special treat, that we all arrived here like 2 hours ago to arrange for you. We'll have live music this morning from the 10-piece New Horizons Swing Band. That music will commence after our segment from England. I say the words we a lot. When I do that, I mean Friday Buzz music producer Ankur Malhotra, engineer without fear Jim Wilson, online producer Elliot LeBrun, and leading the sound engineering for the live music today, Wart, audio production director Aaron Schultz. It's a Friday 8 o'clock buzz. We'll get started with some music from our first guest, Liverpool's Peter Davies and the Good Intentions singing Hard Times. It's a tune, when I reviewed it last night, that kind of fits the mood of the weather that we've had all week here in Madison. It's a lovely song. And I hear in Liverpool as well. Let's get buzzing.
Hard times have come again. Hard winters, cold hard rain. Hard living has left its mark as we stumble through the dark. Oh darling, I think it's true. There is nothing we are coming to. Honey, what am I to do in hard times with you? Hard times, they come around. On long journeys forever bound. Hard travels, they brought us here. To fade slowly, then disappear. Hard bargains, they line your face.
It's the Friday 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Andy Moore. That was The Good Intentions. Gabby and Peter Davies. Peter, with whom we'll speak now. Valediction Records. It's a new novel written by Liverpool musician and author Peter Davies. Music, pop music of the 70s in England is the backdrop, and kind of the foredrop, too, for the story. The tale of rock dreams partially realized, friendship, rivalries, and a lot more. If you enjoy the stories of Nick Hornby, another British writer who likes to rock, you're going to love Valediction Records. It's 2 in the afternoon in Great Britain right now, and joining us for a midday chat is the author, Peter Davies. Good afternoon, Peter, and welcome to the Friday Buzz.
Good morning, Andy. Thanks. Great to be on. Great to hear you again.
Yeah, it's great to hear your voice. This is your first novel, but you've been a performing and recording musician all your life. What sparked your desire to write a rock novel?
I think it's something I'd been wanting to do for quite a long time and had been casting around for ideas. And eventually I thought, well, you know, this has been part of my adult life for a long, long time, and this is great subject matter. And really, I took it from there. And there were other inputs from different parts of my life into it. But principally, I thought, well, you know, there's been a lot of stories written about bands and rock and roll, but not too many maybe written about the personal dynamics within mm-hmm. bands.
I want to get into to that, and I didn't mean to cut you off, but I'm anxious to bring the listeners into some of the language of the book. And so, listeners, please know that interviewing an author of a novel is tricky because you want to give good information about the story without giving too much away. So we're going to set the table for you of this novel in kind of a different way. I'm going to ask Peter to briefly, in the course of 10 or 15 seconds, describe the significance of some people, places, and things in the book. Some of these are words that Americans are more familiar with than others, and also we'll just meet some people in the book too. This is in no particular order, kind of like a literary lightning round, and then we'll talk some more. Peter, are you ready?
I think I might embarrass myself here, but yes, go on.
Okay. All right. Okay, here's the first one. Plectrum.
Plectrum, a guitar pick.
You know, I warned listeners that some of these words are maybe just out of their reach. I had forgotten that's probably the original word for a guitar pick, plectrum. Yeah. Okay, here's the next one. Generation 27.
Generation 27, name of the band that's at the core of the story. It comes from Lorca, the Spanish poet, who formed a group in Spain before the Spanish Civil War back in the 1930s called the Generation of 1927. And that's how the fictional band were inspired to get their name.
Here's a person on the next item, Emma.
Emma, possibly the most significant character in the novel. I'm not going to say why, obviously, because I want people to buy it. she is the only female member of the band Generation 27, but in many ways is the driving force behind the band.
Great character, fantastic character. Driving force is a good two-word description. Here's the next item, Peter. Crisps.
crisp.
Yeah.
You call them potato chips.
Yeah.
We call them crisp.
Okay. Here's the next one.
When we say chips, you say French fries.
Oh, that's
and
true.
We're into the whole. We're into the whole two nations divided by a common language here, aren't we?
So true. And speaking of divided by a common language, here's the next item. Brothel creepers.
Brothel creepers. Oh, I wasn't even aware that Americans didn't use the phrase. Brothel creepers were originally standard wear for teddy boys back in the 1950s. I don't even know if Americans refer to teddy boys, but the guys wearing the drapes and the slick back hair and who used to dance at rock and roll dances, they were teddy boys. And the shoes they wore, they were like sort of sneakers, but with really thick soles. And they were called brothel creepers.
Brothel creepers.
I wouldn't like to go into why they were called brothel creepers. I'll leave that to your listeners' imaginations.
All right, we've got a couple quick more items. Spendlove.
Spendlove. Spendlove is the name of the guy who becomes the manager of Generation 27. He also, in the longer term, becomes far more of a significant figure than the reader might at first imagine. He's a larger-than-life character, Bob Spendlove. He is very much based on a real-life character from that time, who was operating in London at that time, in the late 70s. A big, big mysterious character.
If you're just jumping in, I'm talking with the author of the new book, Valediction Records. Peter Davies joins us on the phone from Liverpool, England. Now, some of our vocabulary under our belt. Peter, give us now just a thumbnail sketch of the novel's plot.
At the core of the novel is the story of a fictional band called Generation 27, who achieve brief and sort of slight fame. They don't become world famous, but for a short period of time, certainly within the UK, they become well known. They form in the vanguard of the punk movement and move on into the sort of post-punk new wave period. They split eventually acrimoniously, like most bands do. And then we look at the lives of the four of them. They were originally very, very close, to the extent that when they were an active band, they swore a blood oath, literally a blood oath, which basically said that at any time in the future when any of them needed the others, they were to send round the guitar plectrum marked Valediction Records. And Valediction Records is the name of their record company. And that would be the signal, once they'd all received the plectrum, that the other one was in trouble and that they should all meet. And that's what happens. So the novel starts in the present day with one of them receiving the plectrum and then it being passed on to the other one. And you find in the course of the first part of the novel, you see where they all are in the present day and how in different ways their lives have pretty much unraveled and gone off the rails, and they are not in a good way. Then you find out more about the history of the band, and then it finishes back in the present day.
Yes.
And we see what happened. We see whether they do meet up again,
yes.
What's happened to them, whether they can resolve many of the issues still hanging over them from those days 40 years previously.
I really liked how the story book ended with the present time on either end, with the past, everything in between. Peter, how does music, the making of it, the performing of it, the marketing of it, all of it, impact human beings' relationships?
I think particularly with rock music, because it's still comparatively quite a recent thing, certainly in terms of how long humanity has had music. And the idea that people with no musical background of any sort, no musical training, could come together with nothing more than a few ideas and a bit of bravado and cool jackets and somehow produce something glorious out of that is still quite new. And the thing is about that is that it brings together people and binds them very, very tightly. And inevitably, the relationships among people who are doing that are intense, which is why I referred a moment ago to inevitably the band breaking up acrimoniously. Most bands usually do. And that is, I think, because those relationships are so intense that they cannot possibly stand up to the length of time. And really, I think to an extent, people sort of grow out of it. People grow up mm-hmm. because most bands are formed when people are in their teens or their early 20s. Mm-hmm. And in a way, they delay your growing up. I think what happens eventually is that people think, I can't live my life at this pitch. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I want to get a house. I want to get married. I want to have kids. I want to do normal stuff. Yeah. I want to survive beyond my middle age.
Let's go there. I'm
sorry. I
stepped on you. But let's go there. The band breaking up. Friendships, as deep and tight as they can be, are fragile things. The word valediction means bidding farewell. Is the book really about the need to let go of the past?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad you picked up on that. It is. It's obviously the name of the record company, and there is constant reference throughout to a poem by the English metaphysical poet John Donne, "A Valediction Forbidding Mourning." And that's deliberate because, yes, the overarching theme is not the story of a band. The relationships within the band, as I said, are very intense, but they're almost a microcosm of how human beings interact with each other anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, we all argue, we all fall in love, we fall out of love, we have misunderstandings, we have personal issues, we all have stuff going on, you know, we all have luggage that we carry with us throughout our lives, and it's about the importance of facing up to that, looking back at your past, understanding maybe why and how you got to where you are, and learning how important it is to just accept in some ways that, you know, things are gone, they're past, mm-hmm. they're not coming back, mm-hmm. and that it's time to move on. And that is very much the overarching theme of the novel.
The book is called Valediction Records. Peter Davies, it's been such a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us on the Friday Buzz, and take good care.
Oh, thank you very much, Andy. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye. Peter Davies' band is called The Good Intentions. He joined us this morning from Liverpool. The book is called Valediction Records. All right. We move now from a novel about music to live music. There's an extra buzz in the Buzz studio this morning. And that's because we have the 10-piece New Horizons Swing Band assembled in the record library. I'll talk with the band director in a few minutes. Before that, we'll hear the band play a song and then a few announcements, and then we'll get encore's picks, then a little more live music from the band. Then I'll be back with that interview, all live and happening right before your ears on WRT-FM 89.9, Madison, Wisconsin, WRTFM.org online. It's 8:29.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Mel from the Mel and Floyd Show. Come on down and join Floyd and me Friday, April 5th from 1 to 2 for our annual Wisconsin Film Festival live show. This year we'll be broadcasting from the Bartell Theater, 116 East Mifflin Street. We'll be interviewing our usual assortment of interesting people from the fest, including directors, actors, writers, people from the craft services table, and if we have some time to fill, maybe some interesting-looking passersby. We'll cover raging film controversies such as popcorn, butter or no butter, seating, center or aisle, and how to properly shush a loud patron. Heady stuff? It certainly is. Yes, it's going to be quite the wild ride indeed. So let's all go to the lobby. Come join the fun with Mel and Floyd at the Bartell Theater Friday, April 5th from 1 to 2 for our annual Wisconsin Film Festival remote broadcast.
The 4th annual Best Bloody Mary Contest is Sunday, April 7th at the beautiful Garver Feed Mill to benefit Great Lakes Hemophilia Foundation and the Bleeding Disorders Community of Wisconsin. Local bars and restaurants give back by showcasing their signature Bloody Mary Bix and garnish, and you get to be the judge. You can vote for your favorite in a number of different categories, including most inventive, most like Milwaukee, most like a meal, and best overall. Tickets include an appetizer buffet and beer chasers. Tickets and more information are available at glhf.org/events. Great Lakes Hemophilia Foundation is celebrating 50 years of educating, supporting, and advocating for treatment of bleeding disorders in Wisconsin. The 4th annual Best Bloody Mary Contest to support Great Lakes Hemophilia Foundation is at the Garver Feed Mill on Sunday, April 7th, starting at 10:30 a.m. You are listening to WORT Madison.
It's the Friday 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Andy Moore. Hey, guess what? I told you about this all this new configuration. We're still figuring it out, hence a little bit of dead air there. but guess what? We got this new table. We've got all of these new whiz-bang mic stands and things. And also, we have a cough button. And if you're a regular listener to this show, you know that I am sometimes prone to, as I call it, barking up armadillos with my sort of scratchy, sometimes springtime allergy-y voice. So, but now I have a cough button. And if you don't know what that is, you can imagine. If I press this button, I'm not pressing it now. But if I do, my mic goes out and I can cough and clear my throat. So I'm going to do that right now. Okay, I'll be right back. Did it work, Jim?
Yeah, that worked.
We got a fresh armadillo in the room, too. That's awesome. Okay, hey, listen, it's Friday. You've been busy all week. The live music scene for the weekend has cranked up while you took your eye off the ball. So you don't know what you're going to do, do you? But there's so much to choose. And that's why we like to present at this time of the week, at this time of the hour, for your entertainment knowledge and pleasure, Encore's Picks. And now here's Jim Wilson with the Encore's Picks disclaimer.
Encore's Picks are not influenced by any outside entities. Encore consults with an advisory board of one, Encore Malhotra. The cost of admission to any recommended show is of no concern to Encore, nor the price of beer, nor the cleanliness of the venue restrooms. Encore has one goal and one goal only in the delivery of Encore's Picks, for you to have a kick-ass musical experience. Encore's Picks is a trademark of the multinational corporation DJ Spin Cycle. All copy and trade therein is solely possessed. Here's Encore Malhotra!
Hey, 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 good morning, Madison. The sun is shining, and yeah, about time.
No kidding.
And yeah, April 5, you know.
Oh, my God, we were in a cave.
Fools. The Los Hours, a good old Aaron Scholz, who's out there in the music library right now, working his magic. He's going to be playing with his band, the Los Hours, tonight at Kiki's House of Righteous Music, and then also tonight at North Street Cabaret, the Blues 10 Jazz Series, Jason Robke, Edward Wilkerson Jr., Mabel Kwan, and Marcus Evans. April 6th and 7th at the Masonic Center, Native Spirit, First Nation Music, Dance, Storytelling. Then we have Anders Svanos, Teleporting Rhythmic Orchestra Cafe, Coda, April 6th. And, of course, our guests in studio today, New Horizons Swing Band on Thursday, April 11th at the Goodman Community Center. Plenty of music there.
Encore, thank you. Yeah. All terrific picks, and you can't go wrong with any of them, folks. New Horizons, as Encore just shared, will be playing next week, but they're playing here throughout the hour, including right now. We're going to hear a little bit of, I think this is a soloist from the band, and then in about a minute, I'm going to probably very rudely break in, and then I want to interview very quickly the band's director, Mark Salzman. Here's the New Horizons Swing Band. What is it? You can't do a what? What's the name of that number?
It don't mean a thing.
It don't mean a thing if you can't hear that swing or something like that. It's the New Horizons Swing Band.
Yeah.
That just sounded, you know, as good as I think it sounds over the radio and the signal next door in the studio, standing in the same room with these horns and percussionists. It's just fantastic. Mark Salzman is the band's director. He's also a beloved retired music and band director at Eastside High School. Right. And Mark, the New Horizons organization is really an interesting entity. Tell listeners about what that is.
Yeah, it's an international organization, really, that started 30-some years ago. And this band was the very second New Horizons band in the world.
On the planet.
On the planet, yes. So a lot of these folks have been in this band for a long time. And we also have a concert band, but this is the part of the swing band.
Yes. It's a kind of organization that offers musicians opportunities to get back to the music or to come to the music for the first time, all of the above?
Exactly, yes. It used to have an age limit that you couldn't be, you have to be over 55 to be in it, but now that is not a thing. We have folks of all kinds of different ages, but that is a definitely something that a lot of these folks have in common. They played maybe in high school and college and maybe stopped for a while, maybe 10, 20, 30, 40 years,
yes,
and have come back to it. And to me, that's the magic of it. You can always, it's never too late to make music.
It's so true. You know, you blow out a knee, you can't play tennis anymore. But
right.
But if you can play a scale and you can dust those skills off and apply them somewhere, that's what makes this whole act so much, so many things are resonating with it. Mark, set up the next tune and then let's hear another song.
Yes, and I have to make sure I mention our other director, Kathy Panwar, and she is going to be doing a tune called Time After Time.
The New Horizons Swing Band, everybody. It's so much fun having live music here. We were actually doing a little dancing. Our film director here, right here in the studio next door to the record library. That was New Horizons Swing Band. And as Encore shared earlier, this ensemble will be playing next Thursday, April 11, at 6:30 at the Goodman Community Center. New Horizons Swing Band, thanks so much to them for getting up so early, which musicians absolutely hate to do. So thank you for doing that. It's the Friday 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Andy Moore. This Sunday, the Barrymore Theater will present in cahoots with the Wisconsin Film Festival, the Wisconsin premiere of a documentary that's been 17 years in the making. Angels of Dirt is the story of a Wisconsin girl named Charlotte Keynes who realized a dream. To become a dirt track motorcycle racer in that very male-dominated sport. We're going to talk to the film's director, Wendy Schneider, in just a minute. But first, Jim Wilson, let's listen to the film's trailer, if we could do that, please.
My girl. She's finding the fast line and finding the jumps.
In the beginning, we were learning how to just ride a motorcycle, but we knew she wanted to race. We'd go out to Aslan, and she would be watching all the time, and she said, I want to get out there, I want to go do that. And her first race, she was really, really nervous. She was kind of scared, but she got through it and never looked back from there.
dirt track is where racing started. If it wasn't for dirt track, who knows if motorcycle racing ever would have became something.
Wild World of Sports, dirt track on TV, when it's coming.
So you go fast, you turn left. It sounds easy, but if it was easy, anybody could do it.
To go down the straightaway and pitch that bike sideways, it's the most amazing thing in the world to watch.
I feel as comfortable sliding sideways at 120 miles an hour as I am sitting on this sofa.
We're racing literally inches away from each other, and you could throw a blanket over five or six of us at a time going down the straightaway.
When you hold a motorcycle wide open on a dirt track and you throw it into that corner with the back tire out, and then you start picking the throttle up, because who picks the throttle up soonest is who gets out the corner soonest, and who gets out of the corner soonest and gets the best drive is who has the most straightaway speed, who's got the best lap time, who's gonna win. I believe flat track's the most exciting form of motorcycle racing in the world.
Angels Third has its Wisconsin premiere Sunday at the Barrymore Theater. The film's writer, producer, and director, Wendy Schneider, joins us now. And Wendy, I know that you've made the rounds on WRT a little bit in the last week.
I have, yeah.
But you saved the best for last.
I did. The best for the earliest.
17 years to bring this together. That's a long time. What's that all about?
Tenacity, you know, dedication. You know, I started the film. I was just so intrigued by young girls racing. The track was local. It's over in Lake Mills. I would just go on weekends with a camera. But really, the first day I went was my first interview with Charlotte Kanes. It really changed me. I just felt like there was something to lean into. I enjoyed her. I enjoyed the community. And that's why I kept going back. Nobody said no. You know, I was really welcomed in, and nobody really knew what I was doing, including me, you know, when you start off a film just out of curiosity. And so that's how it started. I did step away in 2008 after I got in a car accident. I took some time off. And then during that time in recovery, Smart Studios closed. And so I started another project and only dipped into Angels on and off over the years. Mm-hmm. But right around when Smart Studios was released in 2016, we lost Charlotte racing in Santa Rosa. She was a pro, and she lost her life.
You talk about the community being so welcoming, even though they didn't quite know what you were up to, as you said, you didn't either.
Right.
But you can hear it in the voices in that trailer that people are completely okay with laying this on you.
Yeah, I think because, the flat track community really enjoys talking about flat track. I mean, it's a very, it's one of the smaller groupings of professional sports. You don't see flat track on live television. It's usually a subscription platform that you're watching. It's not like you're watching the Indy 500 or baseball or whatever, but it's a niche community that is very passionate and very sincere and has a lot of integrity.
What years are we talking about when Charlotte Kanes raced and then met her unfortunate demise?
Charlotte's was riding at 4, racing at 5. I met her in 2006 when she was 9.
Wow.
And at 20 years old, she lost her life at Santa Rosa. So that was 2016.
The flat track has its own peril. At least it seems to me, the physics of it. With no banking, with no, you know, you're taking those turns when you're on a flat surface, it just sounds like that anything can happen.
It's incredibly exciting to watch the skill of these creative racers. I know that there are some tracks that are banked, but there are different surfaces on different tracks. There are mile tracks, half mile tracks, short tracks, cushion tracks, dirt tracks. You know, over the course of a professional summer, a professional season, a flat track racer is going to have to set their bike up for a variety of surfaces, weather systems, and speeds.
Are we talking about like 70cc bikes or what are they?
Well, Charlotte rode a 750, an XR 750. That's twin motorcycle.
CC,
yeah, 750, 450, 250.
Yeah.
Yeah, she started on a 50cc, tiny little 50cc bike.
Yeah. How did you first, were you aware of Charlotte Kanes on that first visit to Astolan, or did you just say, oh, look at this child?
Well, that's what got me interested, was seeing the young girls race. But I, on my first day on heading there with a camera. I had to stop for a train, and a motorcycle racer was stopped as well. And I told him what I was doing. His name was, or is, Dave Kilkenny. And he said, "You got to meet Charlotte Kanes." And so I sought her out when I went to the track that day and talked to her parents and sat down with her, and the rest is history.
Boy, that train was well-timed, wasn't it?
It was well-timed.
Sounds to me like that she would have crossed paths with you sooner or later.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so many of us have passed that track in Lake Mills on our way to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And it's always intrigued me.
Exactly,
and,
yeah.
And it's just interesting, beckoning, active energy there.
It is beckoning, isn't it?
Yes.
It beckoned me. I went before I started shooting and just would hang out on the bleachers and watch races. And I would just pick a number at random and root for that number. It was like lottery. It's ridiculous.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Wendy Schneider. Her new documentary, Angels of Dirt, it's Wisconsin premiere Sunday at the Barrymore Theater. It's at 7 o'clock, is it not?
7 o'clock.
Good. Talk more about the people and the culture that surrounds Flat Track. What makes them unique?
I don't know if it's, I would use the word unique. I just felt like my personality connected with this community. And that's what made me feel like, oh, I have an affinity with this particular group for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, their approach to racing, their dedication, you know, discipline, camaraderie, community, a lot of fun. You know, there were music connections, some community connections. I felt like I was with the sort of indie rock band of motorcycle racers.
Well,
sure.
I got to believe that there's going to be some racers in the audience Sunday night.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is cool.
Did the Kanes family participate in the film?
You know, both Charlotte's parents are interviewed in the film. Yes.
Who else do we hear from?
We hear from Dave Kilkenny. We hear from artist Renee Bebo. We hear from six legends. Mert Lawwell, who's an incredible icon, and I call him the godfather of Flat Track. He was one of the main characters in the movie On Any Sunday, a Bruce Brown film that came out after Endless Summer. The film stars Steve McQueen and Mert Lawwell and Malcolm Smith, three racers. It's an incredible movie. Everybody should watch it on YouTube. Joe Springsteen, Bubba Schobert, Scott Parker, Nicole Meese. I mean, all really prominent, very, very well-known people in this niche community, which is Flat Track.
Music production, I know, is very important to you. What kinds of music drive the movie? We got a little hit of that in the trailer.
Well, I produced all the music for the film, which was a challenge for me, but I think that that's where my voice comes into this project. I really understood the emotion I was trying to convey in the film, and working on the score was incredibly important to me, and also knowing that I had musicians like Chris Wagner and Joe Bernstein and Frank Anderson, you know, I had others that were going to help support the vision that I had for the music.
Who else helped you with this?
So many people helped me. Dane Arts helped me. Warts helped me in this way. You know, sponsorship, Sub Pop Records helped. Milwaukee Harley Davidson. You know, a lot of people came on board. This is an industry where sponsorship is really important. Becoming a brand ambassador, a reciprocal brand ambassador, is really important. And I did use that with Angels of Dirt to get support.
What was the biggest challenge making the movie?
You just said it. It was making the movie. I think this is a hard project. It involved so many aspects of my life while keeping a business open, while dealing with COVID, while going through incredible personal, changes, you know, in my personal life over the course of the last, it holds 17 years, you know, of my life. So it sees a lot of my history, but it doesn't reveal it.
In the end, what does Charlotte Kanes' story teach us?
Love wins. I mean, I think that that's what it teaches us. Love wins, you know, and loss is expansive. You know, this film has been and continues to be and will be incredibly expansive for people who are, you know, who have a connection on some level. I think it resonates on so many levels with people. And I'm fortunate to be able to begin to see that as it goes out and is screened communally. And that's why I'm going to be doing screenings this summer that are live screenings, community screenings at racetracks or at small theaters where there are lots of people who are connected to the community, because that's the way I'd like to see it begin to roll out.
Wendy Schneider, congratulations on completing the film and for sharing it with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the Friday 8 o'clock buzz. We'll see you on Sunday, right?
Yes, we have a pair of tickets to give away. Yes, we have a pair of tickets.
A pair of tickets, 256-2001. I'm sorry, I almost forgot about that.
That's okay.
And you will be there at the track with us on Friday night.
Yes, please, the Barrymore track.
256-2001, area code 608. Thanks again, Wendy.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to ask Jim Wilson to maybe and Aaron Scholes to cue the New Horizons Swing Band for a little bit of that big band music. But keep me up, Jim, too, because I'm vain and love the sound of my own voice, as you well know. And I'll try to wrap the show here while we get some more swing music to get us and pull us to the curb here a little bit. I want to thank everybody. Wendy Schneider.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. Peter Davies joined us this morning from Liverpool. What a pleasure it was to speak with him. He's the author of the new rock and roll book, the novel called Valediction Records. Aaron Scholes, a big, big special thank you to Aaron, who's been here since long before sunup, getting the engineering together and getting our technical act together, which is no small feat this week, because I told you all about the new soundboard and everything, and everybody is wigged out for good reason with that around here. And Aaron, working with Engineer Without Peer, Jim Wilson, pulled that off. Special thanks to Jim Wilson, too. If you had seen us unicycling around at 2 minutes to eight this morning, trying to get Mr. Davies on the line from Liverpool, oh my God! And Doug, thank you if you're listening for helping out on that too. It took all three of us, I think, to pull that fish into the boat. That was nutty. Encore Malhotra, as always, thank you, my brother, and Jim Wilson. Chris Powers is going to come up next with bluegrass, newgrass, fastgrass, punkgrass, rockgrass, all the grass you can possibly smoke, listen to, on the Mud Acres bluegrass program. That comes on after the Insurgent Radio Kiosk. There's lots to do this weekend. Madison, the sun has finally come up, and we deserve it. I'm Andy Moore. I hope you have a great damn weekend. Aloha. Kamaaina.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, April 5th.
If your home or business is suddenly being engulfed in flames, you count on a quick response from the fire department. But who rushes to aid firefighters when so many of the burning buildings they enter are contaminated with chrysotile asbestos, a cancer-causing product so deadly that it's banned in over 50 countries? This nasty toxic, widely used in construction materials, car parts, and even water systems, infiltrates lungs and kills some 40,000 Americans a year, especially firefighters. For the last 30 years, victims, health advocates, and others have been pushing to stop using the deadly stuff. But chemical profiteers and the politicians they pay kept defeating these efforts. In 2016, though, Congress finally empowered the EPA to ban it. Great! But that same year, Trump happened. With his usual deep analysis, concern for workers, and respect for science, he mindlessly proclaimed asbestos 100% safe, even declaring that the movement to ban it was led by the mob. Thus, his EPA did nothing, and deaths continued. Then came Joe Biden, and hallelujah, EPA has now announced that it is, quote, finally slamming the door on manufacturing, importing, and using chrysotile asbestos. When? 12 years from now. What? Yes, that's a very slow motion slamming. Biden wanted the ban to take effect in 2 years, but industry lobbyists screeched, so our government chose not to rush to aid firefighters and others who'll be killed by this policy of putting corporate profits over lives. This is Jim Hyde.